Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.
Welcome to Lost in Science. We're so glad that you're with us today. My name's Lyndon, and once again, I find myself in a very full studio. Yes, we are in week two of our two-week takeover from some science communication students from the University of Melbourne. Here, holding my hand while we have all of these excellent new faces is Stu. How are you feeling, Stu?
I'm pretty good, yes. I'm keeping things under control.
Good, good. We're here. Us old farts learning from these students who have got exciting things to share with us. This is a great opportunity, I think, for researchers, up-and-coming future researchers, not only to tell us a bit about their work, but to hone their communication skills, because we know that science isn't finished until it's communicated, which is why we're so grateful to have you in the studio today. Last week we had Jess and Nikki, and this week with us we've got Carola and Lucy. Carola, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm very good. Thank you for having me here today. I'm really excited.
Can you tell me what's your area of research and what are you going to be talking about today?
Well, my area of research is very different from what I'm talking about today, but I'm studying corporate sustainability. So yeah, the idea is to find a way to use business and companies to make the world a better place. That's really tough, but yeah. We are trying to.
just that little issue there. Okay, well then, what do you want to bring to Lost in Science today?
Well, today I'm going to ask to our listeners, specifically to the ones that have blue, green, or hazel eyes like me, but are born to dark-eyed parents, and I want to ask them: how many times have you heard the joke about the postman? And and how many times have you asked yourself, how is that even possible? So, well, I'm going to tell you that no, you are not the postman children. And I'm going to explain you why. How is that possible? So in the next few minutes, I'll take you with me to explore a garden of a monastery where 150 years ago, a monk discovered the basis that allow us to know how it's possible to have light eyes when your parents have dark eyes. And also then we'll travel to Italy and find something really, really interesting.
That sounds great.
Well travel.
Well travel. Let's do it. Strap in. Lucy, are you taking us around the world as well?
I will be to many different points around the world, in a manner of speaking. So today I have a story. It's about some controversy and intrigue, which has occurred at the International Commission of Stratigraphy.
Those and mad dogs.
I know. And they really set things alight last year in 2024 when they decided to officially reject the Anthropocene as a geological epoch.
And in your day job, Lucy, your day research, are you a geologist?
I'm definitely not, which will be further explored later in the show. So I'm studying human geography. So my research has been looking at the impact of extreme heat on private renters around Melbourne.
Hmm. Sounds like we need to have everybody back to talk about their own research. The challenge, the task that they were set in their science communication subject was to talk about something that wasn't their area of expertise, but it'd be nice to have them back to talk about what is their area of expertise.
Definitely. Hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think this show's got everything. We've got world travel, we've got time travel, we've got political intrigue, we've got geography.
And we've got peas.
And peas.
Let's do it.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Welcome back. You are listening to Lost in Science, the second week of our two-week takeover from the University of Melbourne science communication students. Carola, I hand the mic to you. Tell us, what do you want to tell us about?
Well, I want to tell you that if you have light eyes like me, and your both of your parents have brown eyes, sorry, I'm sure that probably you're very familiar with the postman joke, as I said before. And I personally have green eyes, but my parents have dark brown. And yeah, my father have always joked about me being the postman daughter.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, luckily all the rest of my face looks exactly like him. But well, how is that possible? Where are my eyes coming from, and where are the eyes of a lot of you, I think, coming from? I'm certain that this is a question many of you have thought about a lot before. And so, well, it's all genetics. And I'll tell you more. Thanks to this genetics, we can even predict the eye color of a couple's future children just by looking at their eyes and those of their parents. So to start this story, we have to go back a little bit in time. And so 150 years ago, in a quiet monastery in what is now the Czech Republic, there was a monk named Gregor Mendel who spent all his free time in the garden planting peas.
As you do.
And so suddenly you realized that the plants sometimes had white flowers, sometimes purple flowers. And also the seeds sometimes were green and sometimes yellow. And so he started questioning, why? Is there like an hidden pattern there, or is it just random? And he wanted to understand if it was possible to predict the characteristics before seeing them. And he actually understood how to do that. And he did it by crossbreeding these plants. And he realized that some traits are dominant on the others and others are recessive. And they don't blend, they don't mix. Just like paint. They literally, some of them are hidden and some of them are shown. And the way they pass them down is predictable. So today we can call this the basic laws of genetics. And what's even more interesting is that Mendel couldn't even know about the DNA because it hadn't been discovered yet.
That's so fascinating. And do you know what was thought in Mendel's time and place before this? Do you know what did people think it was random, or was there a different theory of how things got passed on?
Actually, that was the first theory about that. So I think just before that, they didn't think of, I don't know, actually, how was it possible?
Yeah. I think also there was a strong belief by a lot of people that things didn't change. So the idea that, well, they're peas, they've always been peas and they're always going to be peas because God made them as peas, and that wasn't enough for most people and they just didn't even question it. So they just carried on ignoring it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think many postmen got killed because of
the serious side of the story, the postman toll.
So the point is, the thing is really sad because actually when Mendel was alive, no one wanted to know about this theory. No, they didn't give him credits for it. So we just recognize it today. And now we know that peas are really important for us, because thanks to those peas, we know genetics.
And sorry, what year was this discovery? Around what year was it?
In the 19th century.
In the 19th century. I'm just thinking that was also around the time, I think, that, you know, the theory of evolution seemed like that was a time when everyone was realizing potentially that, you know, things were passed down.
Well, yeah.
Evolution. Are those things connected?
I don't think they're connected. Darwin didn't know about Mendel.
One of the things that Darwin got wrong and gets brought up often, because if Darwin makes a mistake, nobody forgets. But he thought that things got blended, and that doesn't make sense. So he thought that each parent gave a blend of their genes, or whatever they were calling them, to their offspring. And obviously that's not the case. So it was people like Mendel going, that's not how it works. It can't work that way, because we'd all just get diluted into a big blob at the end if we kept getting blended each time. So it doesn't, obviously can't work that way.
And so How does it work with eyes? Let's go on. I'm using eyes as an example because we have a lot of genes in our body and they're very different. Eyes have only two characteristics, so light and dark eyes. And so we can guess the eye color, or at least the percentage of eye color of our future children, because they're just two options. So the eye color is based on a gene that has two alleles. The alleles are the characteristics, so we can call them characteristics. And in this case, light eyes and dark eyes are the two different characteristics, and we all have two of those alleles. But we can only pass one to our children. So if you have like parents with the same eye color, they could pass you the same allele, or actually they could pass you different alleles. How is that possible? Because dark eyes are dominant, or the light eyes. As for Mendel, the purple peas were dominant on the white peas, white flower peas. So if someone have dark eyes, can have or two dark alleles, like alleles with dark eyes, or it could also have one and one, because as I said, the dark one is dominant, but that means that even if you have two different, you're gonna show the dark gene only. And this is called heterozygous, while if you have them the same, if they are the same, they're called homozygous, dominant if they're dark, or recessive if they're light. And the fun part is that if you know this information, you can easily guess someone's child future eye color. Because if you see, for example, me, I have green eyes, so I am homozygous recessive. That means that I can only pass light eye genes. So if I have a partner with dark eyes, but for example, maybe his mother has green eyes, that means there is a 75%, yeah, because, no, 50% actually, 50-50.
Yeah, because if your child gets the dark allele, it doesn't matter which one of your alleles they get, because they
exactly.
all have dark
50-50,
eyes.
50-50, right?
Yep, 50-50.
So to get to the final part of this story, this is not just about eye colors. It is about all of our genes, but many of them have more alleles. So if you get more alleles, the prediction is very difficult. Fortunately, luckily, some of them have just two, and so you can guess them. And for example, genetic disease, some of them are really easy to guess. I'm from Italy, and in Italy there is a condition called Mediterranean anemia, or also sickle cell disease, that is a form of thalassemia. And that one works literally like ice. So you have two alleles, one dominant and one recessive. Luckily, the sick one is the recessive one. So if you get one and one, you're going to be a healthy carrier, because you have the dormant allele, but you're not going to get sick. And what is really funny is that this disease actually protects you from malaria.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so the point is that in Italy, there was historically, there was malaria in Tuscany and in Sardinia. And the funny thing is that my parents are one is from Tuscany and the other one is from Sardinia. So that's literally very dangerous for this disease. And also, we know that my grandma had it because her mother had malaria, and she survived it because of this disease, but because she was a healthy carrier of this disease. So we know that my grandma is an healthy carrier too. When my mom married my father, they decided to obviously get tested before having me. And very, very likely only my mom has it. So she's a healthy carrier and my dad doesn't. So the worst perspective for me was to be an healthy carrier too, but not to get sick. because you actually, like light eyes, you cannot get sick if you don't have to. And so that's, at the end, I'm healthy and with green eyes, so I got the best from both.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
Yes, you're listening to Lost in Science, half an hour of the finest science you'll hear on the radio all week. We're back and we've got Lucy. Lucy, here's the microphone. Tell us, Anthropocene, what does it mean? What is it good for? Is it still a thing? Please enlighten us.
Thanks, Lyndon. So I'm here to talk about last year's surprisingly controversial decision that was made by the International Commission of Stratigraphy, which I will call the ICS from now on, I think. And they decided to reject a formal proposal to declare a new geological epoch called the Anthropocene. So this happened last year, but it actually all started 25 years ago. In February 2000 at a conference of international scientists in Mexico. And so at this conference was Paul Crutzen. He's not a geologist, but he's an atmospheric chemist and very prominent, influential. He's a Nobel laureate. And he stood up and he argued really forcefully to all the scientists in the room that human impact on the planet is so significant and so profound that we've actually left the Holocene and we should declare a new geological epoch. And he called that the Anthropocene. And wow. So, yeah, a bit of a wow. Mic drop moment. Yeah. And so the term just really took the world by storm at that point. And so, you know, people started using it in all kinds of different settings. And you can kind of understand why, because it just sort of captured a feeling, I guess, when you think about climate change and biodiversity loss. It is a very powerful way of thinking about humans and our impact on the Earth. The global scientific body in charge of defining the geological timescale, which is the ICS, so they took this seriously. And in 2009, they actually set up a working group of geologists to investigate, should we actually formally declare this the Anthropocene? But then 15 years later, in 2024, they rejected the proposal. And so I want to talk through the story of what was behind this decision. And it's actually really two stories. So there's the scientific story, and then there's also a political story as well. So to understand the scientific story, we're going to have to revisit something called the geologic timescale. So I had not thought about this since primary school. I know there'll be earth scientists who do think about it every day, but for me, I had to go a long way back. And so the geologic timescale is the big chart that divides units of time in the Earth's history, and it's based on big changes in life forms. And so eras are the really, really big units. They span many hundreds of millions of years. And then within each era, there can be several periods or smaller epochs. So the Holocene is our current epoch. That's just the last 10,000 years. This is part of the Quaternary period, which is the last 2.6 million years. And this is the period that's given rise to humans. And this period is part of the Cenozoic era, which saw the diversification of mammals over the past 56 million years. So,
didn't know we were living in the Cenozoic era.
Yeah, and so the thing that I didn't realise is it's actually not about rock. It's about living things and how they leave their fossils in the strata. And so that's what the different epochs and eras and periods refer to, is these big changes, you know, from sea sponges mm-hmm. to dinosaurs. And there's probably a few transitions in between.
In between sea sponges and dinosaurs. Just a few. Just
wow,
a few
I had no details. Idea of that. Literally. Wow. So
yeah, so each of these periods, like I said, it's associated with a particular layer of strata, which is a layer of rock. And another thing that I didn't realise is that for every unit on this time scale, there's something that is officially called a global boundary stratotype section and point. It's informally known as a golden spike. I think that's mostly how it's known. And so that's an actual place somewhere in the world that shows the best transition between epochs. And so you can actually go visit them. There's a map on the ICS website and they're marked by little bronze coin, kind of round plaque. So it looks the same wherever you are in the world. And that's the place where scientists have come together and said, this is the best example we have of this kind of fossil changing into this other kind of fossil. And so this is all kind of important context for understanding the scientific argument for why the Anthropocene was rejected. So the ICS in their decision gave a few key reasons. Firstly, there just wasn't a clear agreed golden spike that everyone was on the same page about. So the working group put forward radionuclides in the strata in Canada, which were from around the 1950s. And they argued that this showed this big acceleration of human impact on Earth. So if you think about what's happening then, you have nuclear testing, you have the rise of plastics, you have acceleration of carbon emissions. And so they argued this is the golden spike. But then other scientists have argued, well, actually colonization created a lot of emissions through land clearing. And the Industrial Revolution is when we started to see the acceleration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Even the rise of the domestic chicken has been put forward as a possible golden spike.
So you can define the end of an era when you are still living in it? I mean, not the end, but that is just it has just ended?
That is such a good question, and it actually relates to the second reason that the ICS rejected it. So, Carol, you should probably be on the ICS committee because that's actually one of the major problems
I think about it.
Yeah. So geological periods are usually thousands or millions of years, and so this was proposing a new epoch that started just 70 years ago, which is within the span of human lifetime, and so it just was uncomfortable for geologists who are used to thinking in these different time scales. And so that was the second reason. And then the third scientific reason was that some geologists felt the impact of humans on Earth, it's definitely there, but it's so varied across the world in time. So, you know, colonization happened at different times at different places. Industrialization has happened at very different times. And so if you're trying to choose between 70 years or 150 years, you kind of actually need a longer time scale to look at. And so that was the final reason that was rejected for scientific reasons.
And also, how long do you need to have an animal become a fossil or like something become a fossil? Because if you said that it's based on fossils, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's basically something that is left its mark in the strata. And so if you're talking about millions or billions of years ago, it'll be a fossil. But if you're talking about something like radionuclides, that is a record that we know will stay there and is a permanent record, but we can see it now. It doesn't require that fossilization process. Okay. And I guess that's part of the impact humans are having on Earth is things like plastic. We know that they're leaving their mark in a permanent way. But they're not organic materials, so I guess they're leaving marks in different ways.
Okay. Come on, spill the tea. Get us to the drama. Like the science, that makes sense. What were the cultural reasons why? Why were these geologists, you know, having fisticuffs to turn this decision down?
Yeah, well, like I said, there's also a political story, and there's quite a spicy letter media release that you can read on the ICS website that spills the tea. So basically, the ICS is this global committee of scientists, the best geologists in the world from all over. It makes decisions through charging a subcommissioner or working group to put forward proposals, and then it puts it to a vote. So it's a democratic process. So the Anthropocene Working Group was very unusual in how it operated, and it basically just put lots of noses out of joint. So the first reason was that the Anthropocene Working Group, it expanded, and it didn't just have geologists on it. So it actually had archaeologists and even lawyers at a certain point and geographers. And so basically there was controversy because it didn't seem to the ICS like this was necessarily going to lead to the right decision in terms of the geological science. It was becoming more of a cultural phenomenon. Secondly, the working group spent a really long time developing its proposal, about 15 years. And during that time, members of the working group who were putting forward this proposal were doing lots of journal articles and conference presentations. And this meant that Basically, the theories were already out there before there was an opportunity for the ICS to vote on it. So normally it would be more of a closed process. There would be a vote and then you would go out and do the publicity afterwards. And so I think that also rubbed people up the wrong way. And also 15 years is a long time. And I think they say that they're getting increasingly concerned that no proposal had come to the ICS. So then after 15 years, finally the proposal came to the ICS and there was a lot of back and forth. The working group said they needed more time and there was a bit more time granted and then it was put to a vote and then they said there was new evidence. Eventually, basically what happened is they put it to the vote and it was rejected, 12 votes to 4 with 3 abstentions. And then members of the working group, they went on to challenge it on procedural grounds. And there was, a lot of emphasis in the media release from the ICS that, you know, the integrity of the people who ran the vote should not be questioned. And essentially the controversy continues to this day. And so one thing that's really important is that although the ICS rejected the Anthropocene as a formal epoch, it said maybe we should think of it as an event. And so that would mean it's informal, it's not on the official chart, but there are large events that have radically reshaped the Earth that geologists and everyone refers to. And so they did say, although we rejected it, it will nevertheless continue to be used not only by Earth and environmental scientists, but also by social scientists, politicians and economists, as well as by the public at large. It will remain an invaluable descriptor of human impact on the Earth system. And so I guess, as the ICS says, you know, perhaps it doesn't matter. Perhaps this term is here to stay. And it does say something really important about humans and our impact on the Earth.
I think it's great to hear these two stories together because they were both kind of explaining like how research ideas are developing. You think about Mendel with his peas and how people didn't really, he was discovering something before he kind of knew why it was happening. We know a lot more about it now. Whereas to hear about how the theories behind the Anthropocene played out in real time, and you can imagine similar debates happening back in the 19th century around why is this happening, why is that happening. So many thanks both of you for bringing such excellent stories. We can't wait to see you all again next week on Lost in Science.
And that is all we have time for this week on Lost in Science. Thank you for joining us in Getting Lost. If you have any questions or suggestions for the team, get in touch with us by email. We are lostinsci@gmail.com. You can send cheap tweets to us at lostinscience1 on Twitter, or you can find us on the ubiquitous Facebook. Lost in Science is recorded at the studios of 3CR in Melbourne on the land of the Kulin Nation and is broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find a podcast version of the show on 3cr.org.au, or you can tune in the way you did this week when we return in our usual time slot to get
Lost in Science!